Weekdays from 4.
105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Seeing you home.
Cambridge 105.
Entrepreneur, business angel and international telecoms expert, Dr. David Cleveley, CBE, has built and advised many companies, principally in Cambridge. He's been speaking to Cambridge 105's Phil Minot about some of the challenges facing Cambridge and UK business in preparation for the UK leaving the European Union.
Theresa May, the Prime Minister, has pledged £2 billion towards R&D in the UK. Is that a good thing?
Yeah, of course it's a good thing. More money for R&D in the UK, making sure we get innovations and that they get developed and turned into products and so on. It's an absolutely excellent idea. What wouldn't there be to like about it? My concern is not the money. My concern is the networks of people that make that happen, and understanding that money is one thing, it's what you're doing with the money, who's involved, and how are you getting the best, the most excellent kind of research and the best experts and the most motivated entrepreneurs involved. That's the thing that really makes that money worth spending.
Were you disappointed with the decision for the UK to leave the European Union?
Disappointed doesn't come anywhere near it. Like a number of people who wanted to remain, I think devastated is closer to it. And that is not going away. My feelings about leaving the European Union, I think, are getting, if anything, stronger. I look forward to the next 10 to 20 years of the UK with a sinking heart.
Do you think the changes in the freedom of movement, will that affect UK business?
Well, it's bound to. I mean, if it goes through, in and we are talking about possibilities here rather than absolute certainties. But, you know, there are farmers in East Anglia who are planning now to close down their farms and move their equipment into Eastern Europe because of the migrant labour that's required to pick the crops. That's at one end of things. In the other end, you know, the most talented people that I've got in some of my companies are people from outside the United Kingdom. For example, in the former Soviet bloc, they trained radio engineers extremely well. If you want a first-class radio engineer, you've got to go to Eastern Europe. That kind of thing is going to hurt us. We won't notice it for years. We won't notice it for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. But we will notice it over a period of the next 10 and certainly the next 20.
So you've already noticed businesses starting to change in preparation for Brexit?
Oh, everybody's preparing for Brexit. I mean, people are planning to skip out of the UK and go elsewhere and to do things very differently. No business looking at the risks involved in this would do anything other than try and hedge their bets. Why would you unnecessarily take risk? A business is about covering off those risks.
Now, to my knowledge, you're probably as experienced as any other person in Cambridge at dealing with politicians and Whitehall civil servants. Do you believe that Whitehall is actually equipped to deal with preparing the UK to leave Brexit to get us the best deal?
Whatever deal we get will be the best deal because we'll have done the best we can. So that's that. Are we equipped to do an even better deal? Well, of course we're not, because let's look at this from the point of view of complexity. It is enormously complex, and it is not a simple matter of making things and then shipping them abroad. Let's take one example. We get £14 billion a year from foreign students coming into the UK. Now, if you crack down on visas and don't allow those students in, we've lost £14 billion of foreign exchange earnings. Those are actually exports. They're not things going abroad. They're people coming to visit us. And that kind of thing is a very big proportion of everything we do with the rest of the world. So we've got a real problem here. Freedom of movement in the modern world is a large chunk of all our trade. If we stop that, then we're saying we have to replace it with something else. And it starts then to look like a 10 to 20 year program to actually turn the economy around to be able to deal with that in a completely different way. It might be possible, but I've never... My experience of government over the many years in which I've done these things is not that government really understands business and sometimes doesn't quite understand how the economy works. So I'm a little bit sceptical. I meet a lot of very, very intelligent, very highly motivated, very driven, ambitious, clever civil servants who are trying their very level best to handle all of this stuff. Honestly, it's beyond the Manhattan Project, it's beyond organising the Second World War, it's beyond the moonshot. This is probably the most complicated thing a government has ever tried to do in such a short time.
In hindsight, do you feel that the business community could have perhaps promoted their cause a little bit better in a debate about Brexit prior to the referendum?
I've seen all sorts of analysis about this, you know. Could we have done something different? Was it going to be going to go another way? How was this? You can always do it after the event. I think there's a fundamental problem. Our society is fractured. There are a lot of people in Cambridge. You go into Cambridge City Centre, where you know I might be quite happy, and most people vote for remaining. You go 20 miles away, and then the vast majority is in favour of Brexit. And unless you can communicate about what's going on, you're never going to win an argument. And I think we've got a bit of a fractured society here. You know, the problem here is social cohesion. And we're going to go through some extreme pain and possibly some very dark times before we manage to get to the other end of this.
It's interesting you mentioned social cohesion, and I do wonder if the president-elect for the United States, Donald Trump, he had an observation that globalisation has harmed the living standards of ordinary workers. I'm assuming by ordinary workers he's probably referring to what we call the middle classes. Do you think there's some mileage in what he said?
Well, when you look at the economics and look at the behaviour of growth in economies and growth in wages and so on, he's wrong. But that's not what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with politics and we're dealing with what people feel. If somebody feels that he's right, then he's right. A sociologist in the 1920s said, and forgive the sexism of this, but if enough men believe something to be true, it will be true in its consequences. So we've got to understand that the speaking to people about something which may not actually be true, but they feel to be true, we have to think very hard about how that actually works. My concern is that as soon as you start to get into that kind of territory where people like me can no longer explain with facts, I can say the economists say this is perfectly okay, and somebody listening to this will go, people, they don't know what it's like when I'm actually having to do blah, 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 blah. Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. And that's the point about social cohesion. We've been talking to ourselves, and that's not the right way to do it.
Now, I've been told by one Cambridge-based research business, and they export their skills, which is basically research, to clients overseas, that the current sterling being weak is good for their business. Now, presumably the flip side of that is that people who are having to buy in materials from overseas, it's costing them a lot. What's best for the Cambridge economy, a strong pound or a weak pound?
Well, a strong pound versus weak pound depends whether you're talking about the next 6 or 12 months or whether you're talking about the next 10 years. Next 6 or 12 months, gosh, I love a weak pound. Absolutely fantastic. One of my companies is going to make an extra £1.5 million this year just as a result of that. In the longer run, it becomes a bit more complicated. For one thing, everybody who's listening to this radio program has become poorer by 20%. Because you can't buy stuff abroad now that you could buy previously. You don't notice it, but you will notice it. You'll notice it in 5 years' time when the wages that you're commanding haven't gone up as far as the wages in other places. That may be fine. I mean, you know, that's a choice we all make and in getting into all of this. But for business... One of the slightly disappointing things is that actually simply reducing prices these days doesn't necessarily get people to buy more of your goods and services. So it's very good for contracts that, for example, one of my companies has got in dollars, and that suddenly means we get a windfall. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to be as competitive as we might be just simply by dropping the prices, because we won't drop the prices in dollars. We'll try and actually up the profit a little bit. So it's quite a complicated thing. As far as buying stuff in, all sorts of stuff gets traded across the UK national boundary. People get traded, services get traded, and goods get traded. We suck in stuff, we do stuff with it, we push it out again. So if the pound falls, then it makes all of that stuff coming in much more expensive. You'll notice it with petrol prices and other stuff directly like that. A Marmite is the famous example. And that will then feed through. And all that will happen is wages will get squeezed, because if it costs us more to bring in the materials, there's only one place where we're going to get squeezed, and that's on people's wages. And what's disappointing for me, what's really disappointing for me, is that the very people who voted for Brexit are the people whose wages are now going to get squeezed.
Now, you are an entrepreneur with a social conscience, and I think a lot of commentators have noted that. Do you think the austerity measures put in place by the government, do you think they need to be readjusted to take into, you know, the fact that we have got Brexit on the horizon?
Oh, well, government policy needs to change. I mean, if we're going to go for Brexit, you need to rethink a whole load of things. It's not clear what works. But there are some things that you definitely need to do. We've got a limited amount of time before interest rates start to rise. Because one of the things is your currency devalues, you've got to protect that core economy. The inflation is going to rise, so interest rates are going to rise. In that short time before all that happens, the government needs to borrow shed loads of money at low interest rates, in order to be able to start to invest in infrastructure so we can stimulate our own economy. That's certainly a thing that I would do. And I would be building rail and road infrastructure. I would be building... I'd be investing in education, because apart from anything else, if we can't get talented people in from abroad, we had better blooming well grow them here, and we're going to need to put a huge amount more into education in order to be able to survive that period over the longer, that 10 or 20 years that I was talking about.
I have to ask you, you're very independent, you're a very successful businessman. I understand once you're a plumber, we'll talk about it on a different day, yeah. You're a restaurateur, you're a very successful telephone engineer come entrepreneur, and you're also a Cambridge angel. You invest in up-and-coming businesses. What's someone like you doing, getting so involved in the future of Cambridge?
Oh, well, anybody who's lived here for any length of time can see how this place has changed. Wants to preserve, conserve as much of what makes this place a great place to live as possible. And for me, that means thinking ahead. You've got to think over the next 10, 20, 30, 40, even 50 years and understand where the growth, primarily driven from these technology industries, but also from our two universities here, is actually going to take us. And we need to make sure we've got the infrastructure in place that matches that growth. Otherwise, life here is going to be hell.
David, you're one of the authors of a report which I understand predicted that the Cambridge greater area will have 1 million people living in it or thereabouts within 50 years?
I did a projection. I looked at the current growth rates and I pushed them forward over the next 50 years. Although, actually, I had to slow them right up, because otherwise you get something ridiculous. So halve the growth rates that we're experiencing at the moment, and in 50 years' time, Cambridge is 600,000 people, and the metropolitan area that it sits in is about 1 million.
But if that was the case, though, isn't there a risk there that is really going to sort of get rid of the intimacy of Cambridge and the market town feel, which I've been told by people who come to work in Cambridge, you know, study and research and business people, what they love about Cambridge, it's almost unique that it's such a small sort of networking type place, and that's the appeal for them?
Well, you and me both. I mean, you know, I'm really worried. That's why I did the projection, because unless people stand up and say, look, if we keep on growing at this kind of rate, or even, you know, half that rate, we're going to see something completely different from what we're experiencing at the moment, we won't take the right decisions. Now, the right decisions are about the level of infrastructure investment. I mean, transport, for example. We need to have a transport system and transport investment for Cambridge that matches that kind of growth rate. Otherwise, the gridlock that we've seen over the last few weeks and months is just going to get worse. And unless we understand how big and how important Cambridge is going to get, we will never invest enough in transport to keep the environment that we treasure and love so much.
I mean, are you saying we need to think big in Cambridge? Did you not mention an underground as well?
Oh, well, yeah, I'm all in favour of the tunnels. I can't see how else you would do it, to be frank, given, you know, our lovely city centre and how precious land is around here. Tunnels are actually quite a cheap solution. Let's put it in perspective. I mean, you could build an underground system, busway system as do, or a light rail system as some others are advocating, but a tunnel system, you could put that in for 1/20th of the cost that somebody just paid for one of our companies, Arm Holdings. 5% of the cost of Arm would build us an entire metro system.
Because Cambridge is basically changing the world, along with Oxford, there's now been a lot of talk about that there has to be better transport links between the both the university cities. I'm assuming as well, because your background, you'd probably want Cranfield University to be part of any transport system.
Well, I think we need to look to the west. You know, we had that proposed Norfolk, Suffolk and Cambridgeshire deal. Never really struck me as being particularly sensible. But if we look to the west, there are 5 out of the 10 fastest growing towns in the UK. And if we had something that connected us to Oxford, we would have a research and engineering base, including Cranfield, including Northampton, including Bedford, including a lot of these places, that actually is a real powerhouse. If you want logistics, if you want design, if you want engineering, automotive, the R&D, the biotech, that arc between Oxford and Cambridge actually contains the engine room of the British economy.
Now, the one thing, though, which does keep coming up, and is probably the one thing which is going to stall any progress in the Cambridge area, is the question of affordable housing. I now meet people who commute in from places like Wisbeach, and there's nothing wrong with Wisbeach, but it's a heck of a commute every day. And also, obviously, it's costing those who can least afford it having to spend a lot of money on their commute. Is there a solution for housing in Cambridge?
Yeah, it's there are two solutions for housing in Cambridge. My top priority would be transport. If it took me only 30 minutes to get to Norwich, I'd help the Norwich economy and I'd help solve the housing problem in Cambridge. Wisbeach is a really good example. We need fast transport links to places like Wisbeach, you know, preferably rail, because that's the only way in which you're going to be able to move people in bulk cheaply. We could transform these areas. There's plenty of space around Cambridge. We just haven't got the transport infrastructure to match it. And when we don't have the transport, the house prices shoot up through the roof.
There have been people who have speculated over the years that actually South Cambridgeshire, East Cambridgeshire, and the City Council, it needs to be put into a unitary authority. It will help the way ahead. And they've even suggested that, obviously, with that, the County Council would go. Are you an advocate of that?
Well, I'm an advocate of integrated planning in that sense. And there's a lot of duplication, and I think the local councils themselves recognise that. We need to have planning at the right scale. We need to have planning at a scale that would enable us to put the roads and the railways in across the region. That may mean going to the east, out to Norfolk and Suffolk, as well as out to the west. Those kinds of things may be better off being dealt with by one single mayor, a mayoral authority. And Cambridgeshire looks as if it will get that delegated power. It'll be the only non-urban area to get it in the whole of the country.
So, looking ahead, Brexit has happened. There's a new president in the United States, Chavez, a different relationship across the Atlantic. How do you see the future for Cambridge?
Well, Cambridge has to reinforce its position as a global city. It may sound it slightly pretentious to say Cambridge is a global city, but if you have experience of the companies around Cambridge, you will understand that Cambridge is like New York or like London at its best, actually a place where the best and the brightest come and produce some absolutely fantastic things. We need to make sure that we retain that position, both as a brand, so people think of coming to us because we are one of the best places in the world, and in reality, we need to make sure that we keep this open economy, this open society, so that we can trade ideas and goods and services with everybody from around the planet.
David Cleavey, thank you so much for finding the time to speak to Cambridge 105.
Thank you, Phil. Pleasure.